Hi, I'm Dovin. I'm here for recovery. And Elohai, Nitzur Lashonim Eros, the Sanya Dabir Mirmogalam. Good morning. The call is being recorded, friend, whoever just got on. Everybody is welcome to talk, even though the call is recorded. I advise you not to identify yourself by name, unless you're comfortable doing that. That's up to you. Certainly not by last name. Even if you're comfortable doing that, I think that's a crazy idea to do that in a public venue. You're not talking to people who are in recovery here. This is not an SA call. This is a guard your eyes call. And you don't know if the people on the call are in recovery or just curious onlookers. It's doubtful that anybody on this call is a troublemaker, like on the website, where anybody potentially could be there just to to make trouble. You never know that. It's an open public website. But this call is a little less like that because people are making an effort to call in during their busy morning, and that's a lot different than just logging on a computer, sitting in your living room behind your, PJs, in your PJ Media kind of outfit, where it costs nothing, it does nothing, and it means nothing. This is actually calling in. Probably people on this call are safe, but still, I wouldn't give out last names or say any personal information about your life, except for stuff about that won't identify you. So. This call, by the way, is from 8 to 9 a.m., Mondays through Thursdays. So we don't have a call tomorrow, even though when I looked on the log, it says people, seven people called in. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, no, we don't have a call on Fridays, Shabbos, or Sunday. The call's only Monday through Thursday. The other thing is that the format of the call, I think, is going to change next week. Because starting next week, Monday, Mitzvah Shem, because Billy Netter, I'm going to try to have Guard send out a list of questions, topics that are going to be discussed on the call, and that's going to guide the discussion on the call. Because this idea of me having requests for what to talk about just did not pan out, and it's still not panning out. So, and that's fine. It's just not working. So I was wrong. So we're going to have suggested topics, and then of course, still anyone can email me at wequithiding2. I'm sorry, quithi, whatever. We quit hiding. And the number two, that's the email that I established for people who want to pose questions or topics for discussion for this call that we'll, as Hashem, talk about. So I think it'll be beneficial for you and for me to ask questions and bring up points that are real life kintic concerning you about yourself or bothering you about recovery, God, sobriety, the topic of addiction or whatever. That having been said, so the other thing I just want to mention on this call is for anybody who's interested is that excuse me, and I'm not trying to benefit because I benefit nothing from this stuff. I'm not, I'm not a professional anything. I'm just another addict in recovery, thank God. I'm sober, thank God, one day at a time for 19 years and change. Baruch Hashem, and the Ikar is the change. That's a pun. Anyway, I love laughing at my own jokes. I do a call on Guard Your Eyes called the Desperados, and it's listed on the website. You can look it up on the website for the details, but it's a private call. The PIN number is not available online or from the website anywhere. You can only get it from me. And if you're interested in things and you wanted to talk about stuff and you think maybe you're an addict maybe certain topics in addiction are bothering you or important for you to understand or something, and you don't have a safe venue to talk about it in. For example, on this call, anybody could get the PIN number, so your wife could be listening, or your husband could be listening, or whoever you are, your Rebbe could be listening, because your Rebbe could be a habitual masturbator. And as I know many Rebbe, you know, I sponsor and work with and know many Rebbes who are, you know, good Jews who are, you know, sexaholics, and they're in recovery, thank God. The ones that I know are. The ones that I don't know are not, obviously, but the ones who I know are in recovery, and they're good people, and, you know, many of them are staying sober, and Baruch Hashem, and because they're working a program, you know, and doing whatever they need. They're going to therapy, whatever it is that they need in order to stay clean one day at a time, just like I am, one day at a time. So, you know, so whatever. Okay, there are options for everybody. And anyhow, so this group of desperados on Sundays and Wednesdays, noon New York City time to 1 New York City time. It meets twice a week, and the PIN number is private. What we do is everybody calls in, and there's a bing, and everybody has to identify themselves by first name. And when I say first name, I mean the first. If you're married, your first name is the first name is the name your wife calls you. You know, your first name is not your middle name, or your, you know, some other name, your English name that you don't really use except maybe in business circles, but not with any of your friends or family. That's not your real name. Your real name is Moshe, if your friends and family call you Moshe. It's not Moses, because that's on your birth certificate. So we use our real first names. This is not clapping on the bima in shul and telling everybody. You know, this is private. It's called anonymous. Guard Your Eyes is not anonymous. It's secret, and it has to be secret, because it's a public website where anyone can come on, even if they're not at all interested in recovery. Now, why would they come on if they're not interested in recovery? I don't know. You don't know, and I don't know, okay? So, but it is an open website, and there could be very dangerous people on here. But no one's, it's very unlikely for people to call me and ask for the number for a recovery call if they're not serious about recovery. And I talk with each person and screen each person first before I give them the PIN number. So if you trust me that I have some judgment about who's for real and who's not, then, you know, you can be safe on the call. And that's what we do. And, you know, and that's our recovery call. That's just an option for you. Now, for today's topic, I want to talk about something that's very near and dear to my heart. It has to do with tragedies that have happened recently in the Jewish community that I've come to be aware of. There's somebody who a friend of mine told me, and I've come to be aware of, has lost his son in a tragic automobile accident. There's a man who I heard of recently who died at a pretty relatively young age, married man with children, relatively young age, just died. Another husband and father I've heard of in the past few months, in the past few weeks, just died suddenly. Woke up in the morning not feeling well, had a heart attack, and died at home with his wife there. So the morning that I heard about this tragic, Rahmana Litzalan, car accident, where this man lost his son, Rahman al-Salam, I heard about it, and I sat down at Shacharis, and I said Parshas HaAkedah, without making a scene and bursting into tears in the shul and making a whole "look how religious I am" kind of scene, but rather just sat quietly and just said it with kavana, with understanding that Avraham Avinu gave up his son to the Rabbanu Shlom. He surrendered Yitzchak. That's the term in Alcoholics Anonymous, Sexaholics Anonymous. We talk about surrender. Surrendering. Avraham surrendered his son to the Rabbanu Shlom. He didn't just surrender his son. He surrendered his hopes and his dreams. And he surrendered his plan for the world. Avraham Avinu surrendered his plan for saving the world to the Rabbanu Shalom. That's what he did. Good morning. That's what Avraham Avinu did with the Akedah. Surrender. That's the surrender that Alcoholics Anonymous is talking about. AA, NA, SA, GA, BA. You know, all the 12-step groups, when we talk about the word surrender as the key to being saved from our addiction, from having to keep doing our addiction, you know, saved from the trouble of having to do it, you know, and now we can stay clean. That surrender, what I mean by surrender is giving it up, like Avraham Avinu gave up his son. Like Avraham Avinu gave up his son. You might say, if you're a very religious guy, very firm guy, you might say, oi, that's a shanda. What are you saying? What are you saying? Give up my addiction. Give up my pornography and my masturbation, my sex adventures in my mind with fantasy and this and that. How can you compare that to Avraham Avinu? It's such a disgusting thing to say. How can you give up? How can you compare the two? You might say that. And I understand the question. It's a good question. And the answer is very simple. The reason that you keep doing this stuff, the reason that I keep doing this stuff when I do this stuff, which thank God I haven't had to do because of recovery for Baruch Hashem a long time, is one day at a time, is because you love it, is because it's precious to you, and you protect it. You protect, if you're an addict, so then you protect your acting out by making sure that nobody finds out about it. You think it's just because of shame and you'll get in trouble and this. Yes, that's true. But part of the reason, a big part of the reason that you, if you're an addict, and me, you know, before recovery, hide this stuff from everybody and can't open up to anybody about it, especially the wife, you know, give up, she'll divorce me. That may be true, except that's not the only reason. Another reason why we hide it is to protect our access to it. Because we know that if we tell our wives about it, then she's going to be watching us. And the likelihood that your access to it is going to be unhindered is pretty low. You're going to have problems having free access because she's going to be watching you now. And you can't afford to do that. It's too precious. Anything that will jeopardize my access to it is a problem. Now, and we will avoid it. You might say, but I put a filter on my computer. So I'm not, you see, I'm jeopardizing my access. Well, first of all, the difficulty in putting that filter on the first time you put it on was a certain degree of surrender. And if you did it and it was sincere, you probably felt the surrender. And you felt a little freedom. I took an action to let go of my baby, of my buddy, of my love, my fantasy, my obsession. That precious thing that I've been holding b'cheki deep inside where nobody else can reach it. I did an action of surrender. And it's true. It is a small action of surrender, putting on a filter. But when you tested the filter by putting in dirty words or by trying to look up schmutz and you broke it, you snuck around the filter, of course, which everybody does, who's an addict, everybody who is an addict does that. So eventually you discovered that the filters are a waste of time. They make it difficult for you, and you should put a filter on your phone, obviously, or your computer or whatever it is. You know, if you have a tendency to look up schmutz, that obviously you should put a filter on. It makes sense because it makes it a little harder. It puts an extra minute for you to think twice. But if you're an addict, you're going to get around it anyway. There's no filter that's going to work The only filter that works is the filter you never, ever test. Because if you test the filter, if you're checking the filter, if you try to get around the filter, then the filter will not work. The only filter that will ever work is the filter that you never test. People say, I've heard people say on Guard Your Eyes, the only filter that works is a filter in your mind. I'm sorry, I don't have a filter in my mind, okay? I don't know what that means, a filter in my mind. But I know I never test a filter that I have on a computer. I don't test it. I don't say, well, let me make sure that the filter is really safe because I'm an addict and I can't afford to look at schmutz. So let me put in schmutz, you know, and see what happens. And I can't. The curiosity will kill me because it will get me in trouble. But so we protect, getting back to the point, we protect our addiction, our sweet baby, our sweet, you know, the schmutz that we love so much, that we, it's so dear to us, it's precious to us. This isn't cynical. This is true. It's precious to us. That's why we keep doing it over and over and over. The Ribbono Shel Olam tells us that he wants us to do a korban tamid. Why tamid? Why not just whenever you feel excited or thankful, like a korban todah, or this or that, you feel you make an olah for some reason? Why does he want a korban tamid? Why do we have a fast day when it's butal hatamid? Why is it so tragic that it's not? There's no tamidius? Because why does Hashem call you? If a person was, if a Gemara says in Brachos also, if a person davens in a makom kavua, which the Rishonim discuss, is very interesting. Rabbeinu Yonah holds that the makom kavua that the Gemara is referring to there is not in shul, because in shul he held, like many others hold, that there is no makom kavua. You can sit anywhere you want. The shul is your makom, and that's kavua enough. A makom kavua isn't where you daven in shul, according to many Rishonim. It's not where you daven in shul because the whole shul is the same makom for you. The whole shul is the same makom for you. The makom kavua, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, that the Gemara is talking about, is in your home when you can't daven in shul. That's, or on the road, you know, or whatever. He doesn't say on the road. I threw that in. That's not true. He says in your home, that you have a special place in your home where you daven whenever you can't daven in shul. Whenever you can't daven in shul, you daven in a certain place in your home that's a makom kavua, because the whole shul is fine. What's the idea of... Okay, so I'm not going to get into the idea of kavias in terms of tefillah. It's obvious that it helps with your yeshiva das. It's obvious. That's just an obvious reason for kavias in tefillah, even though the Gemara says, don't make it kavua, keep it tachanunim, but the kavias hamakom helps a person have more yeshiva das because the environment is stable, and therefore he doesn't have to like look around and be distracted by it. It's the same place every time. Fine. But the Gemara says, when a person who is koveya makom l'tfilaso, how is Avraham Avinu koveya makom? Because when he was on the road, he didn't just daven anywhere. He went back to the place that he davened before. He davened in the same place on the road. Okay, Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't say that, but maybe that's his raya, that the makom kavua is not referring to place in shul. But anyhow, so Avraham Avinu davened in a makom kavua, and the Gemara says if a person davens in a makom kavua always, then when he dies, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "Eonav Echasid mitalmida shel Avraham Avinu." Okay, Avraham Avinu was Ahuvi, was the one that Hashem loved Hashem, caused Hashem to be misahev al habrias. So that has to be understood. That so when you do a kavias shows ahava. Kavias shows ahava. I do it every time. I'm always here for you. It proves that I love you. It proves that I love doing this thing. If I do it over and over and over and over, every 3 weeks. I've never gone 3 weeks, for L'mashal, a person says, without every 30 days. I try to get on the 90-day chart, and every, you know, by 50, farthest I've ever gone is 50 days. It's like you can't go without it. You got to do it again. You got to do it again. Most people, you know, not most, many people say, you know, it's every day, it's every week, it's this, it's that. There's a certain kavias. There seems to be like an alarm clock in them. Well, such and such amount of time went on. I can't go longer without it. It's not just an idea of there being so many days. It's that there's a kavias here. I'm breaking the kavias. I can't stand that. There's an ahava. I love it. That's why it's kavua. I love it
That's why there's tzinius. Tzinius shows you love something. If your avoda is precious to you, you're matzniya your avoda. Right? You hide the madregas, because when you do something and people see it, something good, and people see it, then it puts a shemetz, or much more than a shemetz, of pride into it, and of codependence on other people that you're trying to impress them in this. So we know, if we're Bali Avoda, we try to do our Avoda and our mitzvahs as privately as possible without show, and that's the tznius. That's hatznea leches im elokecha. Walking with Hashem b'tznius is that's the protection. That's why in the Mikdash, if someone sees kivala asa kodesh v'mesu, why? Because these things need to be protected, because when you make them open, they become whole, they become infected, and they just don't work anymore because they're not precious to you. They're whole. Something that's only once in a while, like Shabbos, is more precious to us, you know? So the tznius helps, it's a different aspect of preciousness, you know? It keeps it precious. In time, you do tznius by making it not as often, once in a while. In place, you do it by hiding and covering it so that nobody sees the thing, you know? In action, you do it by not making your action public, you know? So there's tznius, covering it, hiding it, protecting it. That's what we do. We don't want to tell anyone about our acting out behaviors. You've been hiding it ever since you started. And people call and say, well, I'm a Baal Tshuva. You have to understand, I'm a Baal Tshuva. That's, I had no idea that there was anything wrong with watching naked people have sex in a video, or masturbating myself, or looking at or phone sex, or pornography, or faceness. I had no idea, because I wasn't religious, and not religious people. This is okay. This is fine. So then I became religious, and gewalt, I got stuck with this terrible oven, and I see in the Sfarim, this and that and the other thing. It's not true. That's not true. You always knew something was wrong when you were doing it. You always hid it from people. In fact, you always hid it from everybody. You know? And if you didn't hide it from somebody, so then there's a reason why you opened up to that person. But it's something that you always, people always hide it. The fact that they do it, they might not hide in their society, except it's sexual stuff is always highly personal, highly hidden, highly protected, because it's precious. Like many other good things, well, not many, but like some other good things and some other bad things that people do. They hide them because it's so important, you know. A person eats the last cookie, you don't want everyone to notice. When there's no one around, you kind of sneak it down, you wolf it down. There's nothing evil about it, but it's something that you don't want people to see. There's no avera eating the last cookie, but you don't want people to see. It's kind of, you know, I'm a little ashamed to do it for some reason. I know there's nothing wrong with eating the last cookie. The same kind of thing. It was always something that we hid, okay? So that whole business is just not true. But so we hide. So that's one thing. One thing is we do something b'kvius. In other words, we never go for so long without it. We always make sure to have it repeatedly. The other thing is it's where it's matznia it. The other thing, that's the third thing that Rashi brings us in the Gemara somewhere, that there's this other aspect to Avodas Hashem that's an ikar that shows the preciousness of Avodas Hashem to us. And in this thing, it shows the preciousness of this, of the addictive behaviors of lusting and sex behaviors to us, is Mesiras Nefesh. That we're Meiser Nefesh for this thing. We spend money, we take risks to do it. You know your wife might catch you, but you still do it. A guy was telling me last night, you know, about stuff that he's doing in bed with his wife, sleeping, even after a night that they were together physically, I mean together, you know, and he's doing this stuff, you know, I was doing it with my wife right in the bed. It's like, you know, takes a big risk. Well, what's he supposed to do, walk out of the room? Then she might wake up. Here he can do it, and, you know, do some, look at stuff in a quiet way. So he does the best he can, but he's meiser nefesh for it, b'nafsho yavi lachmo, you know. I'm not making fun, because I understand this myself very, very well from experience. But it's But it's, you know, there's a problem there. I mean, I was speaking with Rabbi Twersky a couple of months ago in his house before he moved, and I said to him, you know, he used to have a phone call for recovery where he said a recovery message for, you know, a minute recovery message a day, you know. And he had, at the end of his phone call, a pretty lady, pretty sounding lady, giving and making announcements about his latest book and this and that. And I used to call in just to hear her voice because it was so nice, you know. Look at me, you know. That's the kind of person I am in my acting out. That's crazy, you know. And I would call in sometimes with my wife in the bed. And she would be asleep, and I would be calling in just to hear this lady's voice. You know, what, I never heard a lady's voice before? No, that's addiction, you know, for me. And that's not, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg for my problem. But that's just a good example of something. And it's precious to me. I try to protect it. I don't want my wife to find out. If she does, then I'll never be able to call that number again because she'll check the numbers and this and that. So I hide it, it's, you know, and I do it regularly, and I'm moiser nefesh for it, and that's what we do. Anybody who's spending money on it, anybody who's hiding it and making lies and faking and going into the shul and acting like you're normal in the yeshiva and being the best bucher and here and there, and I'm not saying you should stop doing those, being good and doing all these, putting on all these acts and doing all these good behaviors, because that's also part of you. You have a double life, buddy. That's sick, but it's a double life. But what, I should throw this away and just be honest with myself and have sex all day long with people and stuff? No, I never said that. But Fort realized that, you know, you're faking and you're living a double life in this life. That's what I do. That's what we do in our addiction, you know? So, and there's Mesiras Nefesh involved. There's a lot of stress involved in keeping up the lie. One of the beautiful things that I discovered in recovery was within a year of getting and staying clean, and regularly, you know, going to meetings and opening up and staying open and working the steps with a sponsor and being an honest member in good standing in a recovery group, my blood pressure went down 10 points. Okay? My blood pressure went down 10 points and has stayed down so far. So my stress level went down because when you're acting out, you always have to remember the lies and excuses that you said yesterday, because they have to shtim with whatever you're going to say today, and you know it. You know it. You know, you know, you got to remember. You know you have to be consistent. You know? So it's stressful. It's just a stressful way to live. You know you might be at work, and someone who you acted out with might show up and recognize you. You know that something, no. You know? Always stress. Is someone going to recognize me on the phone? With the acting out on the phone, is someone, did I talk with this person and maybe that's her? Hey, you know, maybe she'll recognize my voice. Crazy thoughts, because what, there's 4 million people in the world, you know, 4 million people in the area who might be doing it, I mean. And it's like she might be the one, and then, but yeah, that's part of the stress on the call. Just like you all, who don't say a peep on this call because you're terrified. Even a non-identifying peep. I was on the phone at the very beginning of the call. There was one person on the call, and I said, you know, I just want to know, and I'm sincere, this is true, because 2 days ago I got on the call, and everything looked right, but it wasn't registering. And then I called back, and people said, I didn't hear anything. You weren't on the call. And I'm like, oh, no. So I had to make sure it was working, and the person on the other end of the line wouldn't even bang on a desk or clap their hands. Boy, that's going to be identifying. You're going to lose your Parnassa, and you're never going to get a shit if now, you know what I'm saying? If you, you know, it's like, what? But no, there's a hesitancy to even like open up like that, even in a non-identifying way, because we're terrified. We are a terrified bunch. And this isn't condescending or making fun. If you hear condescending and making fun, then that's your problem, because I ain't doing that. I don't play that game, not with you and not with anybody. I'm just stating a fact because I'm that way too in my problem. I know that, because I know that life. It's a stressful, scared, squirrel kind of life where I can't be known, I can't do anything, I can't say, I can't da-da-da-da-da. It's torture. It's torture. And it's a guarantee to keep doing all this stupid stuff that we do in our acting out. So getting back to the point, those are three things, three aspects that show love and preciousness. One, the Mesiras Nefesh, of the difficulty and the hard work at maintaining this thing. Two, Tamidius, that it's repetitive. Three, that it's tanua, it's hidden. All show how precious it is. So yeah, this stuff is precious to us. People don't talk about that so much. People say about the Yetzirah, it's evil, shakes to shaktenu. None of that stuff works if you really love it. You got to face the fact that you love it if you want to get the help that you need. You got to face the fact that it's precious to you if you want to get the help that you really need. So, you know, we try to do the best we can, right? Until it's good enough, it won't work. Until we're doing enough, it won't work. So Avraham Avinu did the Akedah. He gave up. He surrendered his own child. He surrendered his child. He surrendered his hope for the world that this child would grow up to pass along his legacy. He surrendered his reputation. People would say, oh, there's Abraham. He murdered his son for his stupid God who wants human sacrifice, just like our stupid God does. You know, he sacrificed everything to do what God said, do it. Ha'alehu la'ola, you know? So that's surrender. And that's why I said the Parshas Akedah when I heard about this man losing his son killed in that tragic car accident. I said the Akedah at Shacharis. I don't often say the chakras because I don't have the time, you know, but I love it. And I said it that morning thinking, gewalt, gewalt. Avraham Avinu also surrendered. He gave up his son. He didn't actually have to die, except according to the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, whatever. But his son lived, you know, came down from the mountain with, you know, there's different chazals on this, but the basic point is he didn't actually have to lose Yitzchak. He kept Yitzchak, but he gave him up. He gave him up. He was ready to give him up in action. Giving up without any action at all doesn't work. You know, it says Hashem is mitztaref machshava tova lemaisa. So, in other words, if you thought I'll do a mitzvah, and then you know it turned out it wasn't necessary, you think you get schar for it? No, you don't. It's only if you tried to do it. If you took a maisa to do it, not just you thought, yeah, I'll give tzedakah, and then the guy walks by and you see, oh, I don't have change. You know, okay, maybe that is a maisa, actually, if you tried to give it to him and you check to see if you have change. I understand, but if the idea just passed through your mind, that doesn't become a maisa. Hashem is mitztaref, the machshava tova, to a maisa that you did to try to do it, and even though you didn't succeed at doing the mitzvah, so you were ne'anas, and you couldn't do it, now you get schar as if you did the mitzvah. Because you really wanted to sincerely, as demonstrated by trying to do it. How about if you couldn't do a maisa, but you sincerely, fully sincerely wanted to do it with no maisa at all? I think many people would say that would work too. As long as you sincerely wanted to do it, but you couldn't. But the reason that a maisa, the reason that the Gemara phrases it mitztaref maisa, is because it means to tell you that if you don't do a maisa at all, then there's no proof at all that you want to do it. There's got to be a maisa, you know. When the Klal Yisrael left Moshe Rabbeinu after he told them, and him and Aaron told them about the Korban Pesach. Even though it was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and he says, take it 4 days and shecht it on the next day on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. Here, boom, and it says Vayelchu Bnei Yisrael Vayasu Kesher Dibre Aleim Moshe Aaron or whatever. You know, Hashem, the Bnei Yisrael went and they did like Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron told them to do. You know, so the Chazal asked Rashi, I think off the north, says, well, what are you talking about? It's Rosh Chodesh. What, they took the animal and shechted it? It wasn't time yet. They didn't do anything. They just went home. But no, they were goymer das to do it, and they left that place the action of walking out of the room was, I'm going to go home and do it when the time comes. I'm going to go and do it. They actually decided to do it. And Hashem says, Mala aleichem ki'ilu asa'o. It's as if they did it. Because there was a real, how do you know it's a real planning to do it? There are many people who here in this room have made up their minds to never do it again. Is that Shuvah Gemura? No. Is it? What is it? It's a Hir HaTshuva. Are you at Tzadik Gomer at the time? I don't know. It has to be a real Hir HaTshuva. The Kotzker says, Piskuli Pesach Kichudah Shel Machat, V'niyeftach Lechem Pesach Kipischo Shel Ulam, that Kronos and Agolos and Kronos can go through it. The Kotzker says, but it has to be a hole that's Me'ever Le'ever. It has to go all the way through. What's the through? The through is the honesty. It's the realness. Not self-honest. Self-honesty comes from being honest with people. If you're a habitual faker, that you have a double life, you're not going to become, which all from guys are, if they're addicts. We have a double life. We're fakers. And the goyim also have, who are addicts, also have a double life, and they're fakers. And I know many goyim in recovery who their only problem is pornography and masturbation. Hundreds and hundreds, I know. And the only problem that the person actually has is really faking and lying. That's the ikkar problem, not the pornography, the yetzahara, the sin, the desire. That's not their real issue. The real issue is that they're not honest with themselves. They have principles and they don't keep them. That's not self-honesty. You know, they tell themselves that I am good because look how much I regret it. I don't love it. I really hate it because look how much I'm crying. If you don't love it, then why are you doing it? And they say yetzahara. They blame it on God. That doesn't make any sense. That's not self-honest. These people learn self-honesty after opening up to others, safe people. After opening up to safe people, they learn the truth about themselves. They start to see the truth about themselves, and then they can quit. You know, and then they can live without it. You know, the problem that we have if we're addicts isn't quitting. We quit hundreds of times. The problem is living without it. Sobriety is our problem, not addiction. The problem that we have is sobriety. Addiction, we know how to be addicts. How to be sober, we have no clue. After a few days, we start going crazy. After a few weeks, we start going crazy. You do the 90-day chart, you do this, you do that. It's like holding your breath, you know? Holding your breath doesn't work. That's called white-knuckle sobriety. Surrender works. Surrender. Giving it up. How do you give it up? If you honestly, if it's me'aver le'aver, if you really give it up, how do you know aver le'aver? How do you know all the way through? How do you know real honesty? How do you know sincerity? I've been going for decades doing these things. I see I'm not sincere. How many times do you have to keep acting out your lust and then regretting it and act it out again and regret it and act it out again and regret it and regret it and act it out again? How many times does this cycle have to happen until you realize I'm not sincere? I'm not honest with myself. I'm a little crazy. There's something wrong here. I'm not innocent by reason of insanity. There's no such thing as that. There's no addiction and 12 steps, powerless, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't mean that I'm innocent by reason of insanity. It means that I'm fully responsible now because I understand the truth. I'm nuts. I have a problem. You know? Until then, I'm a great guy, and I hate doing this. Look how bad it hurts. But I keep doing it. It's so strange, isn't it? It's so strange, you know? So, and then finally, the moment before surrender is the moment of recognition that, you know why it's not so strange? Why I keep doing this? You know why I'm not so confused? I keep doing it because I love it. Because I'm conflicted. I have two loves, and it's not the Yetzirah, it's me. There's something wrong with me, and I need to get right. And ein chavush matir atzmo mi beis ha'asurim. You can't get yourself out of jail if you're sick. You can't see yourself. You can't create self-honesty. Self-honesty for an inveterate liar, for an inveterate faker. Self-honesty only comes as a result of being honest with breaking through the ice and being honest with other people. After a time, after, not just once, but after a time that a per, after a time where a person who's an inveterate liar and faker, over and over and over, opens up and gets real and opens up to other real people, they will start to learn how to be honest with, they will learn what self-honesty, we will learn what self-honesty means. We pasha don't know before. It's a na'aseh v'nishma kind of experience. The na'aseh is the ikker. Without understanding it, I gotta do this. I gotta do it in a safe way, but I gotta do it. When I do it, then I'll understand. And that's what all experience is about. Experience changes us. Action changes us. This is Olam Ha'asiyah, and you know that all the Nevi'im, when they got a nevuah of something that was going to happen, they had to do an action to make it so, to quote unquote bring it down into Olam Ha'asiyah, because their nevuahs come and, you know, Yetzirah and above and this, so it's, they have to come to Olam Ha'asiyah. How does that happen? Only with an action. So that's why Yirmiyahu would shoot the arrow or hit the ground with a sword. You didn't hit it enough. Bavel won't be destroyed as much, blah, blah, blah. It's an action. This isn't a game. You know, actions have real consequences and mean something. You know, and actions change us. Actions change us. Planning and thinking doesn't change us. Okay, so the love of the lost child, the Akeda, I want to bring it back to something. I want to bring it back, the surrender topic, I want to bring it back to what does that mean, Lamaisa, for me? People I've heard give speeches about someone, God forbid, loses a family member, God forbid, lo aleinu. You know, like the tragedies that I mentioned at the beginning of the call, Rahman and so on. And they say, go home and hug your kids. Go home and hug your wife. You know, hold them tight, hug them, because look, you might not always have them, da 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 da. I say the opposite. I say let them go even more. Let them go even more than you ever have before, because you see from here that you can't keep them. The world, this, nothing in this world is ours to keep. It's all on loan. They're all, everything's a gift. Everything's a gift. Good morning. The only thing that I can do when the only thing that we can do when we see these tragedies isn't to come home and hug our kids tighter and everything. It's to let go of our kids even more. What do I mean by letting go of my kid? Letting go of my kid doesn't mean caring about him less. Doesn't mean involving myself with him less. It means the opposite. It means listening to the child more. Just shut up, sit there, and listen to your child talk. You know? You don't have to explain. You don't have to educate. You don't have to show him how smart you are and how much education you have and how much experience, and you're an adult. And he's a, just shut up and listen. Listen to your wife. You don't have to show her how great a husband you are. Listen to her. Go and be with her and listen to her. Talk to her. Go for walks. Holding them tighter doesn't help. Possessing them more doesn't help. Our problem has always been possession, possession, possession. Taking, taking, taking. That's why when we do al-chait, we do it with a closed fist, banging the chest. The closed fist is egrof rasha, egrof resha. And egrof resha, that's a pasuk, egrof resha. Egrof resha, that's the sign of resha, a fist. A fist is the sign of, that's the symbol of resha, a fist. Tefillah is prisas kapayim, open hands, okay? A fist means I'm taking, I'm holding on to things. And we bang our chest by bringing that fist to our chest, meaning my selfishness, my self-centeredness, my neediness, my possessiveness. I'm touching that to my chest and saying my possessiveness brought me to sin. My possessiveness kept me a crazy self-centered guy who just didn't have the time for what matters in life. You know, didn't have the time to love my wife and children. because I was too busy possessing them, you know, or ignoring them. Ignoring isn't letting go. Ignoring somebody who should be precious to you, that's not an act of letting go or surrender. That's an act of abdication. That's not letting go. That's saying, they're not mine, I don't want them. Letting go means saying, I want them, and holding them, but in an open hand. That's how we hold things. Renauk Weinberg, he said that when his father, when he would stand for Birchus Kahanim, his father would stand in shul with his hands down by his waist in front of him, held open like an ani holds his hand open in front of him, in front of his stomach, like, you know, here, put the money in there. I want your gift, you know. Put it in, you know. And have my hands open. And that's how he would stand, with his hands open in front of him like that. Because the Kohanim are blessing you, giving bracha. Hashem's giving bracha through them, through their tefillas, etc. Vani avarachem. And then Hashem will bless the Bnei Yisrael and the Kohanim. And he held his hands open for brachas. You can only take with an open hand. Brachas don't work with egrof resha. You know, the resha is, you know, kiyam nigrash, because the resha has to possess. He's always worried. Am I going to lose? I have to have what's due to me. You know, my due. And you can't take away anything that's mine. It's all possession. An open hand is the sign of a, you know, of a person who's got their cheretz, of a sane, functioning person. Open hand. My hands are full of Hashem's gifts. Full. Yesh licho. I've got it all. And my hand is open, like Avraham Avinu, who's held Yitzchak, but his hand was open. And when Hashem said, I want him back, Avraham said, okay. That's holding your son with an open hand. That's what we need to do. These tragedies to me means open my hand wider. Hold everything, but in an open hand. Let go of the fist. Stop trying to possess. Everything like this is all a sacrifice. It's all these things are, it's surrender is the key. Surrender is the key for everything in recovery. If there's no surrender, that means I'm still possessing. God grant me the serenity to accept what I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Your will, not mine, be done. Meaning, I want your will to be done. I want to be working your will today. I want to be in consonance with what you say is right for today. You know, I want to be doing your will. I don't have to make it all work out the way I think. I accept your will. That's number one. I accept your will. I'm surrendering everything. I'm surrendering everything to you. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Arba Mises Bezdin. What's the point of Arba Mises Bezdin? It's such a morbid religion, such a morbid, disgusting thing. What does it have to do with it? It's Ve'havdes Hashem Elokecha. Give everything to Hashem. B'chol Levavecha. Shnei Yitzarecha. B'chol nafshecha, afilu hu notelas nafshecha. B'chol uv'chol meodecha. And b'chol mida umida shehu mode lecha have mode lo ma'od ma'od. You know, meodecha means all your strength. Everything you've got is your chayel. Asli if a chayel has it, means your wealth, your riches. That's your chayel, that's all your stuff. Your strength is all your stuff, meodecha. V'ahav to him b'chol me'odecha, with everything you've got, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol levavecha, with everything, all your levavecha, the Maharal says, means your attention. You pay attention to him. Your focus is on him. Like Rav Avigdor Miller says all the time, said all the time. Zichron levracha. So this is what's, that's surrender. There's nothing in love but surrender. Loving means giving, means surrendering, giving stuff up for someone else. That's what loving is. This is what Rav Dessler says, hav, giving, give. Love is surrendering, is giving up stuff, giving to someone, not for anything in return. That's not giving, that's barter, that's business. You know, love and business are two opposite things. Now you can do business in a loving way. You can learn how to do that. But if you want to learn about that, Chuck C., isn't a great alcoholic. He's not on this planet anymore. He passed away about about 30 years ago, great alcoholic, has beautiful talks on surrender and what that means. So does a fabulous fella who has a lot of talks, who just died about 2 years ago. His name was Sandy B. Sandy, S-A-N-D, Sandy, letter S is in Sam, sing, to sing a song, Sam, you know, sing. His first name was Sandy, S-A-N-D-Y, like a sandy beach, and his last name actually was Beach. But his he goes by Sandy B, and there are a lot of talks of his. If you do YouTube, there are a lot of talks of his that are powerful and fabulous. The spirituality in there is so deep and gorgeous that any frumiyid, if he has an addiction like this, can benefit tremendously, in my opinion, from listening to his stuff. He's not talking about religion. He's talking about Derech Eretz. This is not Torah. This isn't Torah Bagoyim. This is Chochmah Bagoyim. This is Derech Eretz, and it's Kodma LaTorah. It supersedes, precedes, and is required for success in Torah. It's Derech Eretz. Recovery is Derech Eretz. It's not Torah. And Sandy's got tons of Derech Eretz. And you can look him up on YouTube. If you do YouTube, his talks were recorded and put on YouTube without his face. They're just audio called Odontology, O-D-O-M-T-O-L-O-G-Y, Odontology. I don't think it means anything, but there's about 25 talks by Sandy B. Every Chassidish guy, every Kollel guy, every Yeshivish guy, every frum person who I've spoken to and suggested to them to listen to his talks tells me that they've helped him tremendously. And if they're addicts, I'm saying, you know. Normal people who aren't addicts should be listening to Musa Shmuzin and Fertig, you know, seriously, and that'll be fine. You know, if you want to, you listen to this, but I'm not suggesting you do it. But this stuff is great stuff, and he talks about surrender, too, and how to do surrender in business and in regular life, too. And Rav Dessler talks about it in the Kuntras HaChesed. The Kuntras HaChesed in Chelek Aleph of Michtav Me'eliyahu talks about surrender in business. That's one of the topics that he discusses. In the Kuntras HaChesed, he talks about surrender in marriage, how to give up what I want and be there for the other person and live that way and still not fall apart and not have yourself taken care of well. He talks about that. And then he talks about ambition in business. How do you have ambition in business and ambition in anything in life if you're a Baal Chesed, if you're a surrenderer, which is a giver, is a surrenderer? How do you do that? He talks about that in Kuntras HaChesed, in Chelek Aleph of Michtav Eliyahu, which is around the center of the book. End of the first third of the book. But anyhow, so that's just something I wanted to share. There's another shtickle that I would love to share on this call that's so dear to me, but the time is obviously late, and it's about surrender in tzedakah and brachos and a few other things that Jews do as a regular matter of course. This is part of our general way we live, and how these things reinforce this concept inside us, deep, very, very, very powerfully inside us on a daily basis. We have a lot of exercises of true surrender. And what are they exactly, and how do they speak to this issue of surrender specifically? So I'd like to talk about that, but I don't know if any, you know. I hope it'll be beneficial to people. So yeah, definitely go home and hug your kids. Definitely, when you hear about loss, Rachman Litzon, go home and hug your kids. But that's not the Yeshua. Isn't hugging your kids? Yeshua is opening your hand. Being free with them, being free for them, and being free with them, not holding on to them tighter and being more possessive, not going home and making sure that you make your mark on your children before you die, you know, and you teach them the right way, and here and there, you'll teach them the right way just fine if you open your hands and hold them in an open hand, and you be free with them, you know. Don't hold on to life tighter. It just makes it hurt more when the reality sets in that you ain't keeping any of this stuff. None of us are, because we're all going to die. Eventually. Eventually, eventually, we all die. Like Masozi Sharm says, we all have to. And that means you're going to lose everything. Rav Yosef Breuer used to say when he got very old and he couldn't see as well and he couldn't hear as well, he would laugh, he would say, Ezehu Asher HaSamech B'chelko, with the chelik of him that's left, B'chelko, with the part of him that he still has. And he's still happy with that. He would joke about that. I mean, it's funny for him to accept it so well, you know. But yeah, we always have chalokim. Ein adam meis v'chatzi ta'avosa b'yodo. It's just a fact. This isn't morbid. It's just the fact of life. You and I will not get everything we want. We won't. As long as we keep trying to get, as long as we're on the take. And that's not evil. It's not evil to be on the take. Oh, you're a taker. It's, you know, that's not exactly what it is. As long as we're on the take, we've signed ourselves away. We're not going to be happy. We're not going to be satisfied. So surrender is really a key to happiness too. The Buddhists know about it. They go to the extreme. They just give up everything in life. They give up their everything. You know, they wear shmatas. And they take tzedakah only, and they have no life. You know, they give up everything, and they consider all the things in this world sources of pain because you lose it, so then don't have any of it. Yiddishkeit doesn't say that. Yiddishkeit says have it. But look what the Mishnah says. Ezu hidarka shel Torah. What's the way of the Torah? You know what I'm going to say. Pas v'meltocho maimim suratista va'oraz tishon v'chayet sartichya. Every one of us knows that that ain't a very happy life. What are you, crazy? Ella what? Rav Dessler explains. Everybody should be walking around having nothing. That's what the Mishnah says. Buddhism? Give up everything, throw it all away. Spiritual pursuits, to heck with everything. Because it's all Olam Hazeh who needs it. That's not the way most people are. That's not the way most of our Gedolim are. Most of our Gedolim have air conditioning in their houses, you know? Most of our Gedolim have a soft couch. Most of our Gedolim sleep in a bed. 99.9% of our Gedolei Torah sleep in beds. They don't sleep ala aretz. What's going on? Rav Dessler says it means, and this relates back, and I'm going to close with this. This relates back to what I was saying before about willingness in Mitzarif L'maisa is only when there's a Maisa, and not only, but the Maisa is essential to prove that you really want it. And that makes the Machshava real in Olam Hazeh. And therefore, you know, that this relates to it. Rav Dessler says, you're supposed to live like that. So then you see that many people aren't living like that. What's going on? The pshat is, if you're ready to do that, if necessary, to keep a life of Torah, if you're ready for Chayet Sartech, if you're ready La'aretz Tishon, if you're ready to only have bread and water by measure and live that way, so long as you can keep learning Torah and living a Torah true Jewish life, if you're willing to do that, truly, so then that's what the Mishnah is saying. Then you're Yotze 100% exactly what the Mishnah says. Now, how do you know if you're willing? How do you know if you're willing? If the situation arises through some Oinus and this and that, and that's all you can have, and you're not bitter about it. And you say, you know, it's Kedai. I hope that I have riches, wealth, happiness, physical comforts. I hope I do soon. But right now I can't have them because, God forbid, you know, there's been a fire or whatever in the house and this and that. God forbid, lo aleinu, there's some loss, and I can't have it right now. And I'm not going to walk around bitter. God is such a whatever. Look at this. Ugh, I don't have time to learn. It's, who has time to learn when you have tirdis? No. Nevertheless, if you do that when it becomes necessary, God forbid, even if it never becomes necessary, if you're truly ready to do that, truly ready, and usually it has to happen once in a while, a little bit here and there, for for it to be an olam hazeh true that you're really ready, then it works. Ashrecha v'tov lach, even b'olam hazeh. You know, that's the message that I just want to share for today. Thank you so much. I love you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.